This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Renee Montagne.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. China's version of capitalism has not improved the lives of all its citizens, and so now the government is struggling to find ways to deliver for the rest. One of China's biggest divides is between the wealthy eastern areas along the coast and the poor western areas. Authorities have tried to improve the economy in the western regions, but some of their projects have encountered serious opposition. From China's Sichuan province, NPR's Rob Gifford reports on the Great Western Development.
In Chinese, the name Sichuan means four rivers, but the province should probably be named 400 rivers. The town of Hanyuan is located on one of them, a tributary of the Yangtze called the Dadu. Hanyuan is a grimy river town that sits below a string of ragged, rugged mountains, right where the river intersects with the main road heading south, the southern Silk Road that winds towards Burma. Hanyuan is known for its spicy peppers that make Sichuan cooking fiery, and its people are fiery too. On a recent afternoon, all appeared normal on the main high street, except a series of huge red banners hung across the road at 50-yard intervals. "Strongly oppose illegal demonstrations," read one. "Stability is everything," said another. The banners put up by the local government were prompted by a massive demonstration here last month, possibly the largest in China since the protests in Tiananmen Square in 1989. More than 50,000 people came out on the streets to protest a huge dam called the Pubugo, on which construction has just begun. They say they don't want to move to make way for it, and if they have to, they're not being offered enough compensation. Asked about the incident, local shopkeepers shy away. No one is prepared to talk, and very soon it becomes clear why. Within minutes of my arrival, a whole posse of plainclothes policemen begin following me, and before long I was detained and questioned for several hours about what I was doing in Hanyuan. A few hours' drive north, there's a similar situation, but there have not yet been any demonstrations, so access there is somewhat easier. Huge machines are pumping water at a construction site near the town of Yaoji, right on the edge of the Tibetan Plateau. A dam is being built here too, nearly 500 feet high, one of many such projects in Sichuan to provide power for China's economic boom. It will flood the valley around Yaoji, forcing all the residents of the town and farmers on the land outside to be moved up the mountain. In 10 years, the region, with its dozens of construction projects, aims to be one of the country's major producers of hydroelectric power. This will be a much smaller dam than the one underway at Hanyuan, but the issues are the same. The signs on the construction site say in large red letters, Huaneng Gongsi, the power company whose chairman is the son of reviled former Premier Li Peng. Many of the companies now operating the major projects in the West are big, semi-private conglomerates from Beijing or the East Coast, with close connections to senior Communist Party officials. Yaoji is panda country. This is where, in 1869, French missionary became the first Westerner ever to set eyes on a panda. Many of the pandas here have been relocated now, and the problem is, soon most of the people will be too.
Oh, bad.
Standing in a field on a steep mountainside along the valley, a middle-aged Tibetan woman is picking vegetables outside her home. The majority of the population here is ethnic Tibetan, adding another layer of complication to the already volatile relations between officials and the local people. She doesn't want to give her name, but asked if the dam will bring her any benefits, she says of course not. Her house and the 1 acre of land that provides her family's livelihood will be submerged, she says. She'll receive some compensation, but not enough. And most importantly, she says she won't be given any replacement land further up the mountain. The dam brings benefits to city people and officials, she says, but nothing for peasants like us. Talking to ordinary farmers up and down the valley, it's a common lament. The central government in Beijing has many dilemmas as it tries to steer 1.3 billion people towards a more prosperous future. One of its most pressing is how to balance exploiting China's vast natural resources to feed its rapid economic development without causing too much disruption to local populations. John Flower of the University of North Carolina at Charlotte has been carrying out research in the region for more than a decade. He admits that the Western development programs do bring some prosperity to Western China, but he says there's a danger of what he calls internal colonialism.
The emphasis right now in the Western development policy is on infrastructure development. It's on building roads, railroads, hydroelectric power stations, this kind of fundamental national infrastructure. The real question is, what is that infrastructure for? Does it bring benefit to the local people, or does it simply create inroads into their resource base that can be exploited for other interests?
Officials in Sichuan would not comment for this report, but in general they defend the schemes, saying that hydroelectric power is clean energy and preferable to building nuclear power plants or burning more coal. Outsiders concede that is true, and they point out that the U.S. itself did not have a great record in the 19th century of either preserving the ecology or the native peoples as the United States developed its western regions. But they say the lack of any checks or balances in Chinese society means that unscrupulous local officials and unscrupulous big conglomerates can take advantage of the new policies to join forces at the expense of the local people. The same is happening all over China with land grabs by local officials who want to sell the land to real estate developers. Eighty-three-year-old Mr. Liang sits beside a fire in a friend's house in Yaoji on a freezing night and sings an old Red Army song. The Red Army under Chairman Mao passed this way in the 1930s when Mr. Liang was a small boy as it marched north to find a base to rally the peasants with promises of land reform. Academic John Flower says even though many peasants are leaving their villages to find work in the cities, the issue now, as before and as always for the Chinese peasant, is land. The land itself and the security it gives. He says the government's attitude to this demonstrates how Communist Party priorities are changing.
Land represents a kind of security. Subsistence agriculture provides a kind of safety net and a kind of security that people who are landless and rootless wandering laborers cannot have. But without land, the big question that people have is, what will our descendants do? What will our children and grandchildren do? If the land is gone, then these descendants have no sense of place and they have no guaranteed sense of subsistence.
In other words, in some ways, we've come round full circle. The party that rose to power 60 years ago with land reform programs giving land to the peasants is now allying itself with business interests and capitalists and forcefully taking that land away from the peasants that the party once claimed to serve. And as the party officials of the town of Hanyuan can testify, that is politically a very, very explosive thing to do. Rob Gifford, NPR News, Sichuan Province, southwestern China.